Workplace culture grows over time. It's a challenge to create that environment when everyone is new, leaders and rank and file alike. WGLT reports on that task for Rivian, which looms large because of Rivian's lofty ambitions. That story just ahead on WGLT's Sound Ideas. Good afternoon, I'm Charlie Schlenker. The city of Bloomington has a new detailed roadmap for historic preservation. Hear how keeping iconic structures fresh contributes to economic development. And Normal Town Council member Kimberly Cummings wants more young people to get involved in local government.
You can have a voice whether you're elected or not, and that you don't have to just sit on the sidelines and grumble.
Hear about Normal's new Youth on a Mission Council. Plus, the NAACP weighs in on Jelani Day. Those stories and a Bloomington Normal News update just ahead. This is WGLT's news magazine, Sound Ideas, on 89.1 FM and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. It can take years for a company to establish its workplace culture, how it feels to work there, how managers treat employees, and how employees treat each other. Rivian didn't have years. The electric automaker is on a hiring spree in Normal with over 2,800 employees. It became McLean County's third largest employer almost overnight. As Ryan Denham reports, that rapid hiring comes with challenges, especially for a company with such lofty ambitions.
The bulk of Rivian's workers in Normal are, of course, focused on manufacturing. The larger concentrations are in energy storage systems or battery drive unit propulsion teams, the body and stamping team, and the general assembly team. It's roughly 350 people in each of those. Production control is another big one, about 400 people, and they handle materials and scheduling. During a recent tour of the plant, Rivian's vice president for manufacturing, Eric Fields, said they still have a lot of hiring needs.
There's no one area that I say, oh, I'm done here, and I purely need this. So we're still in need for team members and team leaders, as well as group leaders. Still need tool and die. We still need engineers. We still need analysts. So there's not any one place where we're completely satisfied and done with our hiring. So almost every level, every position, we're still have some open need for.
It's a tight labor market, too, and Rivian has a lot of competition, particularly for engineers. Fields says even the physical workplace itself can be a recruiting tool. Rivian has invested $1.5 billion into the plant. It's now a brightly lit, shadow-free, clean-looking, modern manufacturing plant. In other words, a place you'd actually want to come to work.
Recruiting engineers into manufacturing is becoming more and more tough because it's not as glamorous as working for, say, Google or Apple or some of the other high-tech areas, but we're applying a high-tech approach to manufacturing and making manufacturing much more attractive to engineers and encouraging them to come into the field as we expand our operation.
The once dormant plant has actually become a real workplace again. There's a fourth fully functional Coffee Hound location out in the plant entry space, which is extremely popular. There's also a full-service cafeteria known as The Junction. A Rivian spokesperson says the food options there prioritize healthy, fresh, and locally sourced food options and change weekly. A meal generally costs between $4 and $7. Rivian is also currently building three permanent satellite cafes throughout the plant. But there's plenty of actual work to do. Rivian recently went into production for its first vehicle, the R1T pickup truck. Its sport utility vehicles and Amazon delivery vans will be joining soon. Here's how Fields describes Rivian's approach to shifts at the plant.
So right now we are building shifts based on need. As the plant is ramping up, each area is ramping a little bit different based on equipment availability or capacity as we bring up. So in body shop, I'm running two shifts in body shop, R1 line specifically. We're not running RPV yet, so body shop runs two shifts. Paint shop has a capacity, can be all the demand right now on one shift. Battery and drive unit are running two shifts. And we'll go into battery now, and we will eventually get back to one shift, but as the battery comes up and it can meet the capacity of the rest of the plant, the rest of the plant's coming up as well. So they're on two shifts right now. General assembly is on one shift, so they can meet the demand based on one shift. Eventually, when we get everything fully vetted out, we will be on a two-shift operating pattern. So we do not want to do three. So the end goal is that we get to a two-shift, three-group pattern that would allow us to run 6 days a week, but still keep everybody at 40 operating hours. So it would be a rotating day. So a lot of OEMs run this kind of basis. We want to be sure that we're not, right now it's tough because we're in ramp and there's a lot of demand. We're running a lot of extra overtime hours. That's not the long-term goal. The long-term goal is we do provide a very nice work-life balance. So that's our ultimate goal. It's very difficult to feel that right now in the way that we're as the plant scales, but that's not going to be around forever.
Fields himself joined Rivian over a year ago after spending the last 13 years building with Nissan in Mississippi. He says working in old-school manufacturing plants, which he calls OEMs, it's a grind. He says he took the Rivian job because of the company's culture, as laid out by founder and CEO RJ Scaringe.
The key of that was the culture is really based on the why. So keep the world of interest forever is the why we're here. And the first time I met RJ in person, the story that I tell everybody is he didn't talk about building the coolest car. He said he wanted to make a positive impact on the world. He said the only thing he really wanted to do after he graduated MIT is he wanted to make a positive impact. And he looked at sustainable farming, a daycare, and an EV car company. And he considered those things all three equal, which is mind-blowing to think, okay, this versus a daycare. But in his mind, his why was, I want to make a positive impact. And then he came up with the how. And so the how that we build around here, and you're talking about how we onboard so many people, we have what we call compass values. So these compass values is how we're going to operate as a company. During the onboarding process, early on, I won't say I did it every single time. I participated in every single onboarding session. And I met every single team member. Not every single one, but as many as I could. Have met all the group leaders and participated in all the group leader training sessions. And we talk about the culture. So the first 2 days of an onboarding session is in a classroom when we're talking about that, explaining that this is, if we give up our culture, if we give up, here's how we want to operate. If we give that up, we're just another OEM. And we cannot forget that.
Reporting from inside the Rivian plants, I'm Ryan Denham.
This story is one of several WGLT reported from this week's visit to the Rivian plant and its off-road test track. Find all of our stories, plus photos and video at WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This week, the Bloomington City Council adopted a new historic preservation plan, a 255-page roadmap focused in part on making the case for why historic preservation matters to long-term growth and prosperity. In this interview with Ryan Denham, City Manager Tim Gleason says the city already is off to a good start, thanks to the members of the Historic Preservation Commission.
We have got a very good commission. And we've now got a plan that was accepted by council. And let's start checking off some of the recommendations that have been in the works and now in a final document for the last several months.
The plan also says that the city might want to consider offering new types of incentives to promote preservation and historic rehab in various neighborhoods, neighborhoods that may not qualify as historic districts, but do warrant conservation regardless. Do you see demand for new types of incentives?
Definitely. That's one where, you get this partnership, and I'll call it that, with a property owner that wants to invest in his or her property to improve the property. We get more bang for our buck, if you will, in incentivizing those kinds of partnerships. And I think that we have a fair number of property owners that are willing to invest in their properties to improve them there was some assistance from the city. So I think more is better in this case.
This plan also says that the city should explore the development of a formal adaptive use program, basically taking an older building and finding new ways to use it. I guess what could a more formal adaptive use program look like in the city?
Yeah, I think it takes many forms, and a lot of times, the ideas and the creativity is right out there within the community, whether it's sprinkler systems to improve the usability of some of the downtown buildings, an elevator grant where we partner with the property. It's not uncommon to see, Ryan, that you have street level office space because there's no elevator. Well, if you had an elevator program, and I think people would be interested in this, you could move that street level office space up to a second or third floor and then turn that street level into a retail opportunity. So I think investment in those types of programs, if they could become reality, I think that there would be tremendous benefit to the community and specifically to the downtown.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. As City Manager Tim Gleason, let's pivot over to Grossinger Motors Arena. What is going on over there these days?
So what we have done is manage this internally, and there's not been much to manage. I mean, we have used it, I think, very well amidst COVID, farmers market, different events, but the biggie is the vaccination site. We have two major shows that are coming up, and we are still in COVID. These international groups, Casting Crowns and Lauren Daigle separately, have started their tours. Well, Illinois is a little bit different in some of the COVID requirements. So some of the conditions in the contracts that have already been agreed to, that we've rescheduled already once because of COVID, those are before us now in October. And we're finding some challenges, nothing that can't be overcome, but some challenges with the agreements. So one area is concessions. You know, we don't want to open our doors finally after 18 months and, just have, soda and, popcorn. You know, we want to be able to provide those in the suites. But an idea came up is why don't we open this up? And it's because of COVID now, but this could become a forever type of thing, where we open this up to the local restaurants in Bloomington to come and man a concession area, and it's an opportunity for them. So that's what the announcement was, and we've already received some interest. There are opportunities in COVID. You know, we've seen the outdoor dining in the downtown, and this could be yet another one of those instances that becomes permanent.
Do you have any sense of whether any of the sports are going to be coming back to the arena in the short term? Hockey, football, basketball, anything like that?
Conversations are ongoing. Short term, Ryan, I do not see that in the foreseeable future, just because COVID lingers like it has been. And I just do not think that would be prudent, cost-effective, for the city to enter into an agreement like that in the near future.
What sort of financial impact does a dormant arena have on your budget?
Well, in some cases, believe it or not, operating some of the events at the tremendous loss that we have in the past is more costly.
That's Bloomington City Manager Tim Gleason speaking with Ryan Denham.
It's really neat when I can see the people who work at the radio station. It's just a really neat way to feel really connected with our community. And I'm not sure if people will get that in other communities. I grew up in the Chicagoland area. I knew who all the NPR news people were, but I wouldn't see them walking down the street. So I think that is really special that we have here in Bloomington Normal.
I'm WGLT financial contributor Sharon Chung from Bloomington. It's the Fall Fund Drive. Keep WGLT community powered with a gift at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The town of Normal has launched a new effort to get more young people involved in local government. Normal Town Council member Kimberly Cummings tells Eric Stock she helped start a pilot project for the Youth on a Mission Council 2 years ago, and the students asked for more. She says the high school students will engage in community service activities, lobbying sessions, and strategic planning.
Youth on a Mission is a program for 9th through 11th graders within the Unit 5 district area. We also do include University High School and Youth Build in our program. It allows them the opportunity to learn leadership skills, as well as getting hands-on experience on the legislative process for a municipality. So they will be charged with completing throughout the program a project, and that project will be presented to City Council in April, in which it will be voted on. I actually will refrain from the vote so that the students can actually get the experience of what it's like. So it will, if it passes, it will be something the town will actually work on, or if it does not, it will not be something the town will work on at this particular time.
What kind of project might this be that they'd be working on?
They will decide. It could be anything from upgrading a park to creating a program. It could run the gamut of what they decide they want to present on behalf of many youth in our community of desire for the community as to what they will want to do.
What are some of the things that you want them to learn about municipal government?
One is learn the process. Many adults do not even understand the process. I also want them to understand how city council, city manager form of government works, which is something that our town is actually a part of. We have a city manager, city council form of government. We do not have a strong mayoral form of government, which is how a lot of major cities have it. And I think people misunderstand the different processes and how the city council acts as a board of directors. We don't get down into the minutiae of the day-to-day operations. We are the boss of one person, which is the city manager. And so hopefully those are things that they can also learn. We also hope that they learn a sense of pride in order to continue to be civically engaged, hopefully within this community, but if they choose to leave this community as they become adults, wherever they are, they partake in civic engagement within their community.
Do you feel there are enough young people here who want to get involved in government and not just at the elected level, but also on the ground level, the management part of city government?
You know, there's a lot of interest around it. So we want to educate them. There's even, you know, hopefully some of the students will get to learn about the job opportunities. I remember meeting a student at one point who wanted to be an engineer, but didn't understand that they could also be an engineer for, you know, a city or a county. And so it's exposing them to those opportunities as well. And so I do think there's a desire to be a part of the process. They want to see change, but I think it's upon us as adults to also guide them in the right way so that they know that you can have a voice whether you're elected or not, and that you don't have to just sit on the sidelines and grumble.
That's Normal Town Council member Kimberly Cummings with Eric Stock. The program will run from October through April. The students will be invited to attend Lobbying Day in Springfield at the end of the session. The program is also looking for volunteers, high school liaisons, and college mentors. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Local leaders of the NAACP are offering their support to the family of Jelani Day. Day was an ISU grad student who went missing August 24th. He was identified last week as the body pulled from the Illinois River September 4th. Day's mother has criticized the attention her son's case received compared to that of Gabby Petito, a white woman who went missing around the same time. Linda Foster and Carla Campbell Jackson of the Bloomington Normal NAACP says racial disparities in missing person cases are real. In this conversation with Sarah Nardi, Linda Foster says Jelani will not be forgotten.
He was cared and he was loved, and that his family is our family. Whatever we can do to have a greater impact so that his name will live on, that this community will never forget him, and that all efforts that were put forth in looking for him, that we would do better for the next time. You know, we don't want to be in next time, but we want to make sure that we're doing everything that we can so that there's not a resolute like this in the future.
And I've spoken with Jelani's mother a few times, and the last time I spoke to her was a few days before Jelani was identified. And you could sense in her this building fire, this not anger, but a frustration and a real heartbreak that she was having to work so hard to get her son's story out there, you know, as opposed to other cases that seem to naturally draw more attention. How do we change that? How do we take this poor family's heartbreak and turn it into something more positive so that other families don't have to work this hard to get attention?
There's a simple answer to that, is that what you're doing for everybody else, do it for these families. That's the simple answer. So whatever we're seeing the disparities in, eliminate that and do as if that was your child. This is no secret. This is no new nuances of how do you look for missing people? How do you bring attention to it? We see it all the time, but not for people who look like us. And so let's take the playbook from them, that if you're doing it this way, that you're getting all these search parties out, you're getting helicopters out, and you're getting dogs out, and you're getting news feed in it. And if you're doing all these things, and they have been resolved based on all the efforts and the resources that's been put forth, if it's working for them, why would it not work for us?
And Dr. Campbell-Jackson, did you have something to add?
You probably know another journalist by the name of Gwen Ifill, I believe. She coined the term missing white woman syndrome years ago. And that simply points out the disparity in coverage and treatment when it comes to missing individuals. We want everyone to be safe for sure, but I am totally aligned that whatever we're doing for others, it should not even be a second thought. We should have that same level of passion and determination for helping to bring resolution to everyone who goes missing. We also know that when it comes to Indigenous people, they have a higher rate of unsolved missing persons cases. And unfortunately, their situations are often, they land on deaf ears. We cannot do that as Americans. We have to realize that everyone has the same significant value and handle the particular situations accordingly.
Every life matters. And until we get to that point, there's going to be that division. Every life is counted and means something. And not because of your zip code or your income or the color of your skin.
How exhausting is it to keep having to have this same fight? Because it seems so simple, right? Everybody matters. Everybody's life matters. Everybody's child matters. How exhausting is it to keep having to make that same point?
You know, it is exhausting. It is. You know, our forefathers have been doing this for hundreds of years, going back to slavery. Slavery wasn't right, you know, and it was, you know, exhausting that they had to fight for their freedom. It's exhausting that we have to talk about equality. It's exhausting that we have to talk about social justice issues.
That's Linda Foster and Carla Campbell-Jackson of the Bloomington Normal NAACP with Sarah Nardi. The LaSalle County Sheriff's Department says it continues to investigate the death of Jelani Day. In a press release, the department says it's working with multiple agencies, including the FBI. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media.